WF4NUE.
WF4HI, WF4HI for signal report.
DJC.
Name here is Bruce, B-R-U-C-E. I'm running a 45 watt radio from my garage Seneca with a Magma right on the file cabinet here in the garage. But I'm having some interference from my new camera system, and I was wondering if I'm transmitting any interference. W4HI? No, thanks a lot. W4HI, clear.
Yeah, M4DJC.
DJC, I believe that was it. Voice sounds real familiar. This is Bruce down in Seneca. How's the coffee?
Bruce, you got a little bit of popping on your end, but not much. The audio is fine, and the signal strength sounds really good, but just a slight bit of popping coming in on this end. It's November 4, Delta, Juliet, Charlie, the name is Jerry. Anderson.
Thanks a lot. I put together a brand new house. We just moved in a week ago today, and I had already put together the camera system, which I've done many times, just do it for a living, put in a camera system, but then I put in my amateur radio station, and I'm getting interference from the video system, not the NDR, but the cameras themselves, and it's only amateur radio station. Over.
About the last 30 or 40 seconds of your transmission, it just dropped out altogether, picked right back up, full strength. Something happened about the last 20 seconds of that last transmission. But it didn't say any different, it just dropped completely out.
Okay, but it's the magma, literally at my height, 5 feet off the ground, inside the garage. Okay, thanks, Jerry. I appreciate it. You have a blessed day.
Happy. You might try to put that bag mount somewhere. Maybe get just a little bit higher and try to find something somewhere in the garage here. Even if you mount it just a little bit above the car, and maybe put it on like a large steel pizza pan, about 20 inches in diameter, because that'll give it a good ground plane. And just find somewhere in that garage where there's not any metal. Sometimes there's some metal in the walls, and sometimes if you have any windows, anything like that, it just reflects the signal back. But generally, you can put one. I know a lot of guys run them up in the attic like that. It doesn't take much. But generally, the shingles and so forth don't seem to bother the signal, but the garage, it could be the door itself causing some issues with it. But like I said, the audio sounds good, and it's just a little bit of slight popping on that end, but every once in a while it'll just drop back completely. So I'm sure there's something in there that the signal's not going through.
How's this one? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Better. The popping is gone. I mean, like I said, there's a little teeny tiny bit of white noise in there, but markedly better.
Magma and with a coax coiled around it on the bottom of a plate. And, I stretched it all out, put it on a shelf. Thank you. I appreciate the comment and coming back. So far, I can see the noise from the cameras on various frequencies. I'm going to try my ICOM 7100, which is a far more selective receiver than these ICOM I-880Hs. Anyway, thanks so much for the time. 73W4HI clear.
Have a good afternoon. I hope you find out the source of the interference and get it cleared up. 4HI M4DJC clear.
And C4IS.
And C4IS M4DJC.
Roger, if you have some interferences that you can't locate, one thing I suggest to look at is LED bulbs. LED bulbs generate a tremendous amount of noise, especially in the HF range. Can you copy?
The other gentleman is having trouble with his interference with his cameras, he thought. Yeah, I'm familiar with LED interference. I've got them all over the house and have had to do a little work to get my end quiet, but mine seems to be pretty quiet on receive. I don't do any HF to match anything right now, so it doesn't seem to bother me on VHF and UHF on FM or on sideband.
Roger, they can generate a tremendous amount of noise. It's ridiculous. They don't bother to filter them out, and they're pulsed AC and pulsed DC. I think it's a DC to DC converter inside those bulbs.
With Philips, I've tried several brands. The Philips seem to do a little better, and had to be real cautious about making sure that everything is well grounded in the achieve. And sometimes, you know, there's because they use such low wattage to run. Sometimes you can even put them in if the wire's not well grounded. Sometimes you can even put them in a fixture somewhere, and when you turn them off, they'll glow sometimes. And I know you've probably seen that. The Phillips don't seem to do that in my location, and I've checked all the grounds and so forth. Sometimes it takes a little bit of work to get all the hash out of the house, and the of course all the Wi-Fi stuff too is aggravating sometimes.
Roger, you said something about glowing.
Some of the bulbs will actually glow if you turn them off, because you've got RF coming, you know, from some ungrounded. If there's some section of your wire that's not properly grounded, you'll actually, if there's some of the shielding's off, you'll actually see the bulbs actually glow slightly, like they're just very, very dim. And I get the non-dimmable buzz, but some of them will still do that. The Phillips seem to be less susceptible to that than some of the cheaper stuff, though.
Of that, the ones I order are from AB Industries somewhere in the Midwest, and they're cheap, and they seem to be nice bulbs, but they do generate a lot of crap.
Incandescents, I may have a few left in the house, but I just don't have any. And I never, you know, the big culprits for me were those CFL bulbs. Those were much, much worse than even the LEDs are here at my location, but like I said, I had to do some checking around to make sure I had all my switch boxes were set up right, didn't have anything in the wrong place, and it was properly grounded. I have a much better deal now. The only time that I've seen anything where I really had a lot of trouble with them, though, is on 6 meters. You know, I've got transformers in the backyard which don't do any good, don't help any with that either. But sometimes I've checked out everything, and he may check, but like I said, I only have an HF antenna up, but with just a wire antenna, something I see a lot of hash on 6, but I don't see them or anything else. Of course, it's at 160.
What's your QTH?
I'm in Anderson. I'm just not too far from Sam's Club in Anderson.
Roger, I'm in Clover Lake, Wiley, South Carolina.
Where that is, I lived in Rock Hill for about 15 years in Fort Mill. Spent a few years in Fort Mill, too. I worked in Springs for about 17 years.
Well, it was nice talking with you. I just wanted to throw that out there. Evidently, you're already familiar with that, and evidently he is, too. But, yeah, I've got a spectrum analyzer. It's a 424 Tektronix. 494 Tektronix, and when I turn on the LED lights overhead, the noise floor goes up 10 dB.
You have one of those around. My brother, I was an electrical engineer, and he's out of the way. He's got all kinds of equipment. He works at Georgia Tech. He was a fiber optics engineer for Lucent Bell for quite a few years. And he's about getting ready to retire now, but he's got all kinds of equipment, and He went through his house finding all kinds of RF coming in, and yeah, the LEDs are by far the worst. Maybe one of these days they'll get them, get them straightened out. But as I said, I've had pretty good luck with the Phillips so far. Had to find them on sale sometimes, though, because they are more expensive. But I tell you one thing, though, mine have lasted. I hadn't had to replace one. I think the one I've had in the longest now was just one that continually burned out for me, and I've had it in about 5 years now, and it hadn't burned out yet, so I'm sure I'll check it on the ground. It didn't hurt any either, though. But I hope you have a good afternoon, and I tell you, I miss that part of the state. That was a nice area up there. We enjoyed it up there for many years. But good talking with you, and talk to you later, maybe. N4DJ, stay clear.
Well, Roger, another thing you want to look at, you've probably heard this too, is your power meter, the new digital power meters. They actually generate a lot of errors. I had mine switched out to the old type, and my power bill went down, even though they billed me an extra $20 a month for reading it. But they have to come out and read my meter, and they don't like that, but it cost me $20 extra a month, but my power bill went down about $40, so I've come out on the good end of that. Anyway, you have a good one, NC4IS clear.
Okay, you have a good one too. Good talking with you. Thanks for that idea. That's a good one to you. I run my couple of my radios. I just run off lithium iron, you know, iron battery, the iron phosphate. I've ran power supplies for years and the switchers and tried linears, and I got where I just run off battery now. And it's pretty quiet. But that's good to see. Good talking to you. Hopefully. You got some rain up there. We hadn't got much down here. Need some. Talk to you later. N4DJC.
That's why the LEDs just don't run at the voltage of the mains. There are no 120-volt LEDs. What is that power conversion circuitry that's even in there that causes all that high-frequency noise? You know, it seems that they could be quieter.
They could. We used to, and my wife worked, she was an apartment manager for about 15 years, and we'd buy a commercial, we just buy laser commercial incandescents. We always bought 130-volt bulbs, because then they lasted so much longer than 120, and I don't even know if people even sell those anymore, but, I don't have any, I may have two or three incandescents. Mine are relatively quiet, but I'm not HF, I'm not on HF, so... It doesn't really affect me. It doesn't seem to affect me as much as it does somebody on HF, especially somebody or some of the, 80 or maybe 160. And 50 is always, 50 megahertz has always been a problem for me, too. But I think it seems to be fairly quiet. But with FM, it's not that big of a deal anyway.
It's unclear why voltage conversion circuitry is necessary at all. I mean... there are diodes that'll take 120 volts, 220 volts. Put two of them back to back so it lights on opposite ends of the 60-cycle cycle. I'm not sure why any power conversion is needed. But it sounds like what they're doing is they're taking 120 volts, they're doing something with it, they're converting it to direct current. Maybe for that reason, maybe to get more light out of it. If you had it running off of alternating current, it would be dimmer, because the power factor is lower. Maybe that's why they're doing it.
They always, they always claim that they run cooler, but of course the transformer part in the base, actually runs pretty hot. But I have to be cautious, when I put mine outside. I have to be cautious what I put it in enclosed. If I put it in an enclosed place. Or, seal light from, sealing from the weather, that sort of thing, because it does get, regardless of what they say, it does get pretty high. It's not, I think overall it's probably cooler, cooler than a 100-watt bulb or something like that, but you take one of these 12 or 14-watt LEDs, the transformer in the base where the transformer all the electronics are, it still gets pretty tasty in there.
Incandescent light bulbs, I think out here they used to use them sometimes to heat the chicken coop. On a cold winter day, you turn on the light bulb in the chicken coop, a 100-watt incandescent bulb. I don't even know if you remember that that toy we had as kids 40 or 50 years ago, that Easy Bake Oven. I guess it was more of a girl's toy. It would bake that. It came with that little brownie mix. You could bake little tiny brownies. I think that was only a 60-watt bulb, you know, in some sort of plastic enclosure. And it was, you know, hot enough to bake a brownie. Horribly dangerous toy, I would imagine. You wouldn't be able to sell it nowadays. It'd be like, remember lawn darts? You know, burn yourself on an easy bake oven and get hit with a lawn dart.
That's in my time range. My wife had one when she was a kid, and they get really high. They changed them up a while, and some time back, I think, but I don't know whether they even sell it anymore or not, but and that's like the Vacuforms and all the other Mattel stuff that none of us had any business messing with. But that easy bake, that thing would, you know, it would get really hot. But I don't recall what it used, but she threw hers away years ago. But you know, I think a couple, she and her sister both probably, you know, used that thing as much as regular oven back in the day.
We have exactly the same thing now. In a way, it's an air fryer, but look at it closely, it's basically an easy bake oven. It uses the waste heat from a halogen light bulb. Halogen bulbs are bright, they're also very, very, very hot. So a fan blows the waste heat from the bulb into that glass, you know, cylindrical glass cooking area. That plus, I think there's an infrared bulb, and you know, it gets hot enough to cook up a chicken or cook up a steak or whatever you put in there. I don't even use my regular oven anymore. The regular oven has been sitting there for at least 6 months, only if I ever have to do something like a pizza pie. But yeah, you know, we got the same thing now, the air fryer. It's a big easy bake oven.
Panasonic Flash Express, just like a toaster oven, but it uses, it's got three infrared bulbs in it. I've had this for 25 years, I guess, and it cooks so much, you know, since I don't have to preheat, it cooks a lot faster, but it's not like the air fryers, but you can put metal in this one, unlike a microwave, and you know, it'll brown stuff and do everything like a regular toaster oven will do. But it cooks about 30% faster than a regular toaster oven does. And those things, they quit making them. Well, I know they started making them again now, but they're, you know, I've really enjoyed mine. It's just a small, but it's been very handy if I want to, you know, put something in rather than heat up a regular oven, something I don't want to put in the oven rather than a microwave.
It's basically, some of the cheap ones are plastic. There was one called the New Wave oven, which I think was like, but this is, you know, a glass cylinder, like a Pyrex cylindrical, a really big Pyrex bowl, basically, you know, and the cover has the halogen light bulb, and there's also, I think, some sort of infrared light bulb, and that's what cooks the food, is the waste heat from the bulb. I guess that's why it gets so bright. They're very bright, but they're also very hot. And I like them a lot, even if they didn't cook that much faster, for the simple reason that it's a whole lot easier to clean. You know, squirt some dishwashing liquid and put a couple of cups of water in there, and then basically just turn it on. Because it also swirls the air around. So now it swirls around hot air and soap. It cleans it right up. So that's what I like about it. It's easy to clean.
A little bit older technology. This is not, this didn't have a convection type fan or anything like that on this one. But I've seen those. I've never used one. They've always looked interesting, but we just don't do a whole lot of cooking anymore anyway. But it does look interesting. I know a lot of people have them. They love them. I didn't realize it used what it used to fry, but that makes perfect sense.
The scale goes up to about 450 degrees Fahrenheit, so I guess the halogen bulb in close enough quarters produces a lot of heat. Yeah, I found it at a thrift store. It was like $20. from what I can tell, pretty much brand new. And I'm looking at it, and someone else is looking at it. That's a popcorn popper, right? Yeah, that's one of the things you can do with it. But yeah, that was a figure. For $20, I'm getting this thing. And it pretty much replaces my conventional oven. I don't think I've fired up. The one burner on the surface I might occasionally use. The oven itself, forget about it. I don't bother with it anymore. I don't think it's been turned on in 6 months. As I said, the last time might have been for a pie. A 16-inch pie is not going to fit the Easy Bake Oven. So if you want to bake pizzas, that's fine. But, yeah, I like that. The other thing that works well is the Instapot, the little standalone pressure cooker. I cook, between those two appliances, I cook, I would say, everything. And, very, very easy cleanup, uses very little power, and just good things to have. That was another thing I found at a thrift store for, like, half price. So, if you find the right thrift store, you find good things like this.
About the Instapots, I got a couple of guys I know that really like them. Like I said, we just don't do enough of that type of cooking since it's just the two of us now. But they like theirs. Our experience with pressure cookers from years ago wouldn't be pleasant. But as a matter of fact, I just listed a small pressure cooker that we hadn't used probably, we used it one time in probably 30 years or more. And I put it online for sale, and I had somebody send me a message and got it almost the same day I put it up for sale. It was a small, but people gone nuts, so it's basically it's a similar deal, but it was a real small one, though, which is unusual. It wasn't big enough to do it. Man, this now is a cooker instead of a pressure cooker and a pressure canner, two different things. But it was mainly for cooking, but evidently the guy must have wanted one because he's asked exactly the size he wanted, and I said, well, we've had that thing sitting in there for well over 40 years.
Yeah, there's also a regular hot pot. Just put stuff in the pot and heat it without pressure. Leave the lid, leave the valve open. And it also works as a slow cooker. I did a corned beef a couple weeks ago. Throw a corned beef brisket in there. A liter or two of water. And leave it in there forever. Come back that evening, and you got corned beef. So, I just like things like this that make life easier and, is easier to clean up, because I'd rather not clean the kitchen. But, yeah, between those two things, I think I cook everything.
I crock pot a lot. We've got a round. My daughter's got an oval one, and we probably got the same crock pot. Probably had the same one probably for 40 years, I guess, we've used. We use that for a lot of different things. Because it does make things easier. It's easy to put a roast in there or anything in there, chili or anything else, and just take it nice and easy. And it's real easy to clean up as well. Kind of a set it and forget it type of thing. But we don't use this. She uses the oven occasionally, but not very often. We can make do with just about with a hot plate almost. But as I said, we do some cooking in the fall and winter. We're trying to do a lot of cooking. I cook outside a good bit in the summertime, but that's about it.
Things you don't think would work in a pressure cooker, like spaghetti. You would figure a pressure cooker would destroy spaghetti, but I did that just now. A pound of ziti or rigatoni, two cans of tomato sauce, and 2 pounds. I actually put a pound of ground beef and a pound of Italian sausage. And if I have some cheese, throw the cheese in there. And, pressure cook for like 12 minutes, and you've got baked ziti or, whatever it is. Cheese, pasta, other stuff, but I don't know. I happen to like things like that. As I said, between the pressure cooker / hot pot / slow cooker, between that and the Easy Bake Oven, I don't think there's a single thing I can't cook. So, you know, the conventional oven just sits there. I only ever use the one burner on the stove. And, you know, I don't use the oven anymore. And if there's the three other burners that are there, you know, don't care. As I said, for me, I like things that are simple, easy to set up, easy to break down, and easy to clean up. So, because, you know, I'm only cooking for one person anyway, so who do I have to impress?
JC Friday, yeah, I know what you mean. Just simplify matters. Like I said, I got a couple of guys, matter of fact, a couple of guys that are here on the radio every once in a while. They both, you know, two of them, Bill, N4 WH, I think it's WHM in Harville. N4 WHM in Harville, he's got one. They use theirs a lot. And I've looked at them, but as I said, we probably wouldn't, I doubt we would use one. We might at some point in time, but you know, we don't need more stuff. We need less stuff than what we have now.
I had the one that they were advertising on television. The thing that's also like a convection oven cooks basically, it's a hair dryer is what it is. A hair dryer or a heat gun. But those are plastic. And quite frankly, they're rubbish. I mean, the plastic broke within a few weeks. I ended up throwing the whole thing in the rubbish bin. So, but this one's real good because the body of the thing is basically a really, really big Pyrex bowl. So, you know, that'll last a while. Again, you know, how much cooking do I need to do? It's just me and half a dozen cats is all that's here.
Much for that, then. How much at all? Did you get your computer stuff straightened out? You were talking to somebody the other day. I think you were talking to somebody the other day about finding somebody a laptop they needed or a hard drive or something.
I forget who that was, although I wrote him I sent him an email. I have extra laptops. I was going to give him the one laptop. It's a Dell laptop. It's maybe 10 to 12 years old, but it's probably better than what he has. You know, I've got so much surplus at this point, you know, he could probably just have that one. It's got Windows 7. I suppose I could put Windows 10. You know, I don't know if I'd bother or not. Computers I always have. So if anyone else needs one for cheap or basically free, because there might be others I can get rid of, for some reason I seem to collect them.
Jimmy, KT4 LSL, I think. I hadn't heard Jimmy on in a few days, as a matter of fact. He must be out fishing somewhere. He lives right down the road from a few miles. But yeah, I heard you talking about that. I've got a couple of SSD drives. I always keep my SSD drives out of my old computers because I can always repurpose those. I don't have any real, you know, I think the biggest one I got maybe is a T56. I got 512s in my other machines, but I just had one extra Samsung 256. I kind of used it as a portable type drive. I just hooked it up to a little adapter. It works okay. It's not great, but it works okay. It's pretty fast. But I think you were talking about the, I guess that's a 2-inch, uses a 2-inch size drive, I think. I may be wrong.
Use those 2.5-inch hard drives. Some other smaller machines like the Mac Mini use them as well, which is, it's a desktop, but it's kind of built like a laptop. Hard drives, never give away a computer without pulling out the hard drive and either smashing it to little pieces or just keeping it around to put in another system. you know, that's why if you ever buy computers in bulk, like from businesses, educational institutions, government institutions, they pretty much never come with hard drives. You know, and hard drives are cheap enough. I've been seeing right now on Amazon, these are 3.5-inch hard drives. They're desktop hard drives. I've been seeing 4 terabytes for $40, which is an insanely low price per gigabyte. I mean, I bought 6 of the things already. I may buy 1 or 2 more. They were like $55, $50, $40. Hey, for $40, get me another one. I'll fill up a computer with a half a dozen hard drives if I have to. So, yeah, hard drives are cheap. Always try to recycle them. And if not, then take them out and smash them. Because you never know what information is there you might not want anyone to have. You know, I got my in-laws one time. I was away for a while. I came back. They had thrown out all my computers. And, you know, I know this is a whole other story that takes another couple hours to tell. But, man, I was fit to be tied because, I said, you don't understand something. It's like throwing away a filing cabinet that has papers in it. For one thing, I might still need those papers. And secondly, you just release those papers out into the wild for anyone who wants to look at them. There might be credit card payment information, ID card information, bank or brokerage information, or there might be stuff I just don't want people to see. So, yeah, always smash hard drives when you give away a system.
Several of them out over the years. My brother-in-law has access. He has access to one of those DOD deals that grinds. It grinds them up, literally grinds them up. I've never seen anything like that in my life. But tell them what that piece of equipment costs. But that's what they do with theirs. They grind them up, and you know, and it's just nothing but shavings, filings. But I don't think I've ever actually thrown any of mine away. I have one, I think. I've got a hard drive somewhere. We took it into the special room and then ground it up too. But the solid state drives, even if they're not very large, I keep those because I can do those. But I got a point now where I'd rather give my computer, laptop, or whatever to one of my grandkids or something like that, or take the hard drive out and just throw it away rather than try to resell it or anything like that. Because, yeah, the solid state drives, the old spinning type drives were different. So these solid state drives, they're real difficult to get to anywhere near clean as you want them to be.
Hard enough with a sledgehammer. You know, the platters are made of aluminum or ceramic. You know, they're not that strong. As long as you can smash the platters into a couple of even larger size pieces, you know, there's no possibility of, now there is actually, there's a DOD erase algorithm, which involves overwriting the same sector a couple of times. I think first you overwrite it with zeros, and then with ones, and then with some random bit pattern, and then with zeros again. It's a 4 or 5 pass thing, and to do that to every sector takes a long time. It might take hours. And there's also a command built into the firmware of the hard drive. It's part of the ATA command set. There's a self-destruct command, which basically tells the head, the read-write head, you know, just go out and write zeros everywhere. But yeah, you know, if you're that worried about somebody finding something, then, you know, just smash it up, give it a good pounding with a sledgehammer, and you should be fine.
There is hard overwrite the solid state drives, though, from what he told me. There's something about the way some of them, maybe not all of them, but something about the way some of them are designed. Maybe some of the Apple ones. See, it's real difficult to wipe those clean. I've used that DOD DOD piece of their program before to wipe a real old one from years ago. And even then, I just kept the hard drive and gave the computer away with the hard drive. And that's been years ago. I think it overrode it like 7 or 8 times per sector or something like that. It took hours and hours for it to complete it. And it wasn't a very big hard drive back in those days.
You see, the computer that I found, somebody left it behind in a trailer I was renting that for some reason had all the pornography on it. All right, I'm going to take this hard drive out of here, but I'm going to give it a good wiping first. Not that there's anything illegal about, most pornography, but yeah, the guy had half the hard drive filled with porn, and I think he was a tattoo artist, because there was like thousands of pictures of various body piercings and tattoos. Some woman with her kids, her ugly kids and her ugly husband, including a couple of videos of her and her husband engaging in various, again, there's nothing illegal about any of this, but it's just embarrassing. So, it might be embarrassing. So, yeah, take out that hard drive and then just throw it off a tall building. Or, again, the sledgehammer. The aluminium or ceramic platters, they're not all that strong. You just have to smash them.
I've done that before. I'm too lazy now. I just take them out and just reuse them. Cause I keep the computer so long, it's new. It just gets me on, because the hardware, all the Apple hardware I've got these last few years, is generally not anything, it's still operational. I just use it, I can't use it anymore until it gets slow. It's not, or they quit supporting it with software updates, security updates, and I'll take the hard drive out. Of course, all the stuff now, it's a lot of stuff. I think it's almost glued in or something. It's not removable like it was even 7 or 8 years ago. I mean, the RAM's glued into everything. It's just stuck inside the shell. They make it so thin. There's no other way to support to attach it, I guess.
Then you don't have, because I don't have the very, very newest computer I have here is a late 2012 Mac Mini. Because what I think it is processing speed has leveled off over the years. We're at the complexity versus performance curve is more or less logarithmic. So we're at as complexity quadruples, power doubles, so we're kind of at the flat spot in the power performance curve. So I have 10, 12-year-old systems, which to me work perfectly well. This might be the newest one right here, the 2012 Mac Mini. And there's one, the monster with all the drive bays, that's one that I built, I think, in 2010. There's another one, a Dell server. That's the other one with the 6 drive bays. I'm not a gamer or doing anything where the incremental increase in performance in all these years has done me that good. So the systems from 12 years, 10 years old, still work perfectly well. And the one who's notoriously bad for this, as far as upgradability, is Apple. Apple, let's see, since about early 2009, well, I don't know about the others, the one I usually have, over the years, I've had a couple of Mac Minis. Starting in the early 2009 models, they started soldering the processor. So forget about trying to upgrade that. And the 2014 or 2018 model, they started the RAM. Well, now, if you got the one with the 8 gig of RAM and you want the 16 gig of RAM, I guess you're out of luck. Because that's no longer user upgradable. And yeah, now I'm waiting for them to finally, well, you never know. Now they're going to start basically soldering the hard drives or the flash drives. And now I guess when you want to decommission your computer, you're going to have to smash the entire thing. They'll probably start the secondary storage, the flash drives or the hard drives, they'll probably solder those next.
Yeah, now I have a 2020 MacBook Pro, but I got rid of my 2008. That was one of the last ones I think where you could change the RAM and hard drive out. I took the hard drive out of it. It came with just a standard hard drive and upgraded it to an SSD quite a few years ago, and it did fine. But it only had 2 gigs of RAM or something like that. It wasn't much. And now when I buy one, I just buy it with as much RAM, well, not as much as they offer, but as much as I can afford. I usually buy it with 16 gigs of RAM and buy the, maybe a terabyte drive because they aren't upgradable. And, of course, the drive's not that big of a deal anyway because you can always add accessory drives, that sort of thing to them, but with these Thunderbolt ports. But the RAM, you can't. That RAM hadn't been upgradable since maybe 2009 or 2010. So now I try not to buy a real expensive version of it, but because if it lasts me 10 years, I've got plenty of use out of it. It's just as the only thing I have a problem with is when they start declaring obsolete. 2015, that's the last MacBook Pro that had all the legacy ports on the USB-A's and the MagSafe power cord, the SD card adapter and all that. So I'm hanging, and it's an Intel basement, so I'm hanging on to it because I run Windows via Parallels with it for my radio software stuff. That's the only thing I use it for now. But that was a pretty expensive laptop when I bought it, because I did buy it with 16 gigs of RAM, and I think it had 512 drive, but it's only about half full. I don't keep that much stuff on it.
The one I was talking to about that. Now, Parallels, does that work? Is there a version finally that works for the Apple Silicon architecture? Apple Silicon, M1, M2, ARM, whatever the hell it really is. Because Parallels is a virtualizer, right? I mean, you're running an Intel, it runs the Intel instruction. You have to have an emulator now built into Parallels. Is there an emulator for Parallels that emulates Intel? So now you can take your Windows software and run it on VMware and Parallels might have been working on that. I don't know.
My 2020 MacBook Pro is an M1, and I have not tried to install Parallels on there, but I've talked to some guys that have, and my impression is this. If it does not, whatever it does, it still does the virtual machine thing. And, of course, with Parallels on a Mac, it sets up. You can run it concurrently. You don't have to reboot any of that sort of thing. You can run it concurrently with the Mac OS. But my understanding so far with the Parallels running Windows 10, for instance, is that it doesn't have, for some reason, it doesn't have the porting correctly. It's a kind of a pain in the you-know-what to get the port serial ports and stuff set up, because, the new ones don't have, they've got the USB-C or Thunderbolt ports. They don't have the old USB-A type connections. And to set up a serial, or different ports is difficult from what I understand. That's the one caveat. If Windows, Microsoft ever comes out with an ARM version of Windows now, then that might be the way to go, maybe. But whether or not they do that, I don't know.
I was on ARM. yeah, what about those surface things? The surface thing that's half notebook, half laptop, whatever it, you know, whatever it is, it can't decide. Those Microsoft Surface tablets, those are ARM. So yeah, Windows for ARM, I'm guessing, is out there. Now Apple, let's see. Apple, when they went from PowerPC to Intel, they had this tool called Rosetta to take PowerPC instructions and translate them to Intel instructions. You know, basically recompile the program as it was running. They would have had to have had the same thing for the M1 and M2 machines, because I got to take Intel instruction. I got to take Intel instructions and rewrite it for ARM or strong ARM or whatever the hell it is that Apple Silicon is. It's based on ARM, as far as I know. So now Parallels, let's see. Parallel, yeah, but you know, Parallels is a hypervisor. Parallels is doing a lot of things at the low-level hardware level. I don't know, last time I heard there may have been a version of VMware or Parallels, which basically does the same thing. It starts, you know, it's got the equivalent of Apple's Rosetta thing. So, you know, that problem, I think, is sorted. Or just stay with the Intel versions. Stay with the Intel products for a while, because I don't think Apple's moving away from it that fast.
Again, this is, you know, this is not at a high level or anything like that, but my understanding is that there is a Rosetta, you know, being used with M1. But now, as I said, the only thing, there was a guy asking a question about it on a forum, on an Amateur Radio forum, in the last month or so, that was talking about running, you know, changing to an M1, you know, and running Parallels. And I don't know where this, I can't remember which one I'm running. I'm not running the old, I'm running like Parallels 15 or 16 or 17. The one I had originally would work, and I could just, as a one-time buy. Now I have to renew it every year, you know, renew the license on it every year, which is expensive. And I've already bought but I've already got the original, you know, full Microsoft 10 on the Mac now. So I mean, that was $100 or so. It wouldn't, you know, they told me just get the original, go ahead and get the commercial version. Don't buy the stuff, you know, don't try to, you know, download a free one like an OEM one or something like that HP or somebody else uses, and it works good. But my understanding is that it will work, but now how well, I don't know, and I'm just don't want to buy a Windows-based computer, because the only time I'd ever use it would be for radio software. Otherwise, I think I would touch it. I've only got a couple of radios that I use it for anyway, and as long as my 2015 is operating and, you know, everything's still working, I'll continue to use it for those. And plus, it makes it so you don't have to have all the dongles and stuff hooking up the USBs and so forth.
Buy from, or I'll give you some 20-year-old Windows laptop. You can still run your old your radio software. Yeah, Rosetta. Well, let's see. Rosetta became Rosetta 2. Same idea. Translate Intel instructions to Apple Silicon instructions. ARM, whatever architecture it actually is. You know, but that works at the applications level. When you start dealing with things that dig deeper into the system, you know, hypervisors like Parallels or VMware, which basically have to provide what looks like a Windows environment. In other words, the Windows software, the Windows program basically has to see Windows hardware, or what it thinks is Windows hardware. So this is at a lower level, which may be, you know, Rosetta. In other words, Rosetta wouldn't know to, or Rosetta would get in the way, or I don't know what the heck would happen. But presumably, probably the latest edition of Parallels or somebody is, you know, rewritten for ARM, and it also has its own version of Rosetta to say, oh yeah, here, look, here, let's take Windows, here's an Intel block of instructions, let's translate it. And I think that, I think I read an article saying they did do that by now. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm still running. I'm not running anywhere near the latest operating system I need to use anyway. The two Apple machines are running El Capitan. There's one that I built. The one that I built about 10 years ago, 12 years ago, is still running Snow Leopard. And I actually have one older than that, an old PowerPC G4 system, you know, my backward compatibility system, which is still running Tiger. So I can't run most of this newer, most of these newer programs anyway, so I couldn't tell you what to do.
You see, Friday, well, like I said, I've got it set up, you know, about as well as I'm going to have it set up right now. I don't want to clutter up another machine with another virtual, you know, with another virtual machine anyway. It's just that I can use that one for that and use what I got now for, you know, until something different goes on, or if I, you know, as I may change radio systems at some point, and, you know, the icons I can use, I don't even have to run Windows to program the icons. I can just take the SD cards out of those radios and just move a CSV file from one to the other. So it's not a big deal right now. I mean, it may be something. I don't do that much programming with them anyway. The only other one that I've got that does require and has to have some type of Windows, Windows is my scanner, my unit, and SDR type scanner. It does require that upgrade the firmware and update the databases, nationwide databases, every once in a while. But as again, you know, I could probably borrow one of my daughters or something and set it up on that if I had to. But I don't know. I haven't really looked into it. I looked into it to begin with, and like I said, one of the guys I know, he was dead on it, and then he decided just to use a PC instead of going throughout the house. And my understanding too is that I don't think and I don't know. Like I said, I'm not as astute as you are about this, but you know, I don't think you can run boot camp on M1 either.
No, all the boot camp does is it carves out another partition on the drive, so you could install an out-of-the-box, set of Microsoft Windows, and then it's got a couple of, Apple-specific Windows drivers. So, yeah, no, boot camp for M1, that's never going to be a thing. But, you know, whatever you need for software to run under Parallels, you know, there's nothing to stop you from creating a bunch of virtual machines. Let's see. I've got Windows 7 Pro. Let's run that. And let's see. At the same time I run that, I can run Windows XP. And if I add Windows 10 here, I could probably run that. And, actually, but this isn't Parallels or VMware, this is VirtualBox. You know, the thing about VirtualBox is it was basically free. Oracle has it. It used to be Sun Microsystems. So I do this sort of thing all the time using VirtualBox. Parallels and VMware, I can't really tell you much about.
Yeah, my father-in-law used VMware. My brother-in-law set it up for him on his Mac. He had a desktop Mac, an older one. And he said, he knew that he got him a Mac Mini and a keyboard and a display. That's what it was. He set it up on there. And he was having trouble with memory then, that he really couldn't get it to operate. He was doing, I think he was using Adobe Acrobat and put it in the, I don't know why I didn't buy the Mac version of it though, but he was using it for something. It might have been a, could have been a word processor. Might have been Microsoft Word, but anyway, they had it set up and it was always confusing. I like, the parallels works better for me. It's simpler for me. I want something just easy peasy, you know, I gotta just open it up, meet it, and Windows 10 comes up and loads up and runs the desktop ready again. Plus I can run, I can just go back and forth in between, between Safari and, you know, and the Windows based stuff too. So works out good for me. But anyway, we'll see how it goes. Hopefully they'll set up something at some point. But I just don't know. I mean, you can buy a Windows machine so cheap now. I guess it doesn't make sense to do that. But I just despise having another computer. I don't like working with another operating system anyway. But most of the stuff that will run, I think it's backwards compatible to about Windows 8 and maybe 7. It won't go back any further than most of the radios. I'm going to go back to, I think it goes back, maybe to Windows 8. But I got to jump out there. Good talking to you. And we'll talk some more about this. I'm going to have to go in and start digging in and find out about the parallels on M1. Now, you got me interested in it again just to see if I was... See if I was telling the truth or not. Anyway, talk to you later. M4DJC.